Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Why Bitcoin podcast. After a little bit of a break, it's just me, Jeff, here, and starting the show anew. Off to an exciting start to this fresh new season. I'm joined by one Chris Barnes. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good, Jeff. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Awesome, man. So me and you met via Twitter. You are a proclaimed shitcoiner looking for Bitcoin maximalist ideas and trying to understand the Bitcoin maximalist perspective on certain parts of quote-unquote crypto. Is that correct?
Well, not exactly. I mean, I started off as a Bitcoin maxi, and I've only later in my crypto understanding and evolution came to appreciate other use cases other than just money. And when I tagged Max Kaiser in that tweet, it was, you know, I didn't expect him to retweet it. Even he quote tweeted it too, which I found interesting, which I think we can get into. Like, I don't think Max is necessarily as negative about other use cases as he might come off. I think that might be a bit of a persona. But anyway, I digress.
Okay, right on. Yeah, Max is an interesting character. I'm not the hugest fan of his. I think he's a little bit over the top in some aspects of it too, but I guess he was one of the first quote unquote maximalists, if I recall correctly. So I can see how he stands on that side of the fence. So I'll just give a quick little preview. Anybody listening, I don't speak for all maximalists by any means. Chris, I'm sure you would agree that you don't speak for all crypto people. We're just two guys that want to have a conversation that on Twitter is basically impossible to have without degenerating into just screaming matches or getting angry. So I like to have a good conversation with individuals, and that's what we'll try to do today. So yeah, by no means are we the spokespeople for either crypto and or Bitcoin maximalism, but that's what we identify as, I guess you would put it that way, correct?
It seems, yeah, titles are hard to ignore in this situation, so we end up falling into them. But yeah, we're our own people. We're all humans in the end of the day, even if we might disagree on different things. Like you mentioned, like some maxis, it's so negative. It's like, still fellow humans. Like, we're not that different, even though we might have slight different philosophies on what true money is and what other use cases for technology might exist.
Exactly. Okay, so let's get rolling into it. So I guess my first question for you, Chris, would be, how would you define a blockchain?
Define a blockchain. It's, let's see, probably, I mean, I guess there's so many attributes you could add to that, but generally speaking, I like the basic Byzantine fault tolerance that Bitcoin provided. So that's kind of solving the Byzantine general problem. And you can have a decentralized immutable ledger that requires a minimal trust from those that wish to interact with that ledger, both viewing and sending and receiving balances, I guess, right? We call them tokens, but it's just a ledger. So I think that's in essence a blockchain to the simplest form. And then, of course, what does decentralized mean? To me, that's not a binary term. And I know Sefdina Moose, or whatever his name is, he disagreed with me in that thread. And he said there's a threshold. So decentralization versus centralization is a threshold. And once you cross it, then you're decentralized, which is a funny answer, because if there's a threshold, that means you can define it, right? So it can't be subjective, has to be an objective threshold. And if there is a threshold, then that means there is a gradient involved. Because once you get there, as you approach the threshold, you can clearly argue that you're more decentralized. So to me, that's the loaded term that often gets labeled all shitcoins are basically not Bitcoin because they're quote unquote centralized. And I think it's just a gradient thing and about where we put those bookends of purely centralized versus purely quote unquote decentralized, which even Bitcoin couldn't, even a maxi like yourself can't probably claim that Bitcoin is just the definition of decentralization, because it becomes more and more decentralized as more nodes get added and the hash rate goes up. It's becoming more decentralized. So clearly it's not a binary thing if you look at it that way.
Yeah, I would agree with a lot of the things you said there. I think a blockchain is just a ledger of transactions that can be verified by individual users of said blockchain. And I think decentralization is, I think of it more as like a trend. Is something becoming more decentralized over time, or less decentralized over time, or aiming towards decentralization or aiming towards centralization. So being in my perspective, I see Bitcoin is only becoming more decentralized and all other blockchains, crypto assets going towards more centralization. So that's where I guess my first issue is. And I guess another good question to ask you, so we can kind of be on the same page here. Why do you think decentralization is important? Or do you even think decentralization is important in a blockchain?
Yeah, it's important, especially, well, it's the whole trust question, right? So the fact that we refer to these things as being trustless, is, I think that's even like, it's a funny term, because we're all humans, and humans, we can't help but have some form of trust. I mean, we trust our family. We want to live in a community. There has to be some type of trust there. But so I think that term gets confused, and it's not that you don't trust each other as humans. It's that you don't need to trust a counterparty or a third party to validate that you have the asset that is Bitcoin in this example. So, yeah. So what was the question again about decentralized?
Do you think decentralization is important for a blockchain particularly, or
it's the trust question. Yeah. Sorry. That's where I was going. Yeah. So basically if you're centralized, then you have to trust a central authority who's maintaining the ledger. If it's decentralized, then, and again, it's along that gradient towards pure decentralization, whatever that might be. But the further along you go from centralized towards decentralized, the less and less trust you need in some sort of central authority to validate for you the status of the ledger.
Yeah, completely agree. So that's why with Bitcoin, it's important that it stays decentralized, and it's important that it stays trustless, because I agree with you. We're going to agree with a lot of things here, Chris. I think trust is very important in all aspects of life. The one thing that it isn't important in is math. If I can look at a math equation and 2 + 2 = 4, I can check that over and over again, and I know what's real. Whereas with everything else people, humans have in interacting with each other, you need to trust other people. You need to have relationships with people that you can trust in order to work together. But in something as important as the money that we use, I think you'll agree here again, is that when we use a money that is controlled by a centralized person, the person that's in order of that will corrupt it so that they can improve their own life, so that they can be better off than the other people. If corruption is possible, then corruption will happen, is another main focus of what I think when it comes to blockchain. So would you agree with that? Or do you think that there are people that are uncorruptible or incorruptible?
No. Humans are humans. So I'm with you on absolutely trusting math, and the fact that if the math checks out, it checks out. There's no corruption possible, right? No, you can't trust humans. That's why the whole fiat system and the central banking powers of the world, I mean, all the shenanigans we see in different elections and all the WEF world control garbage, that's all built on human flaws and the ability to be blackmailed and the ability to be corrupted, essentially, and receive a fat paycheck to close your eyes and shut your mouth and do what you're told and be the puppet that we see in most of our leaders. So I'm 100% with you on math. I think where we'll hopefully get to, right, is the fact that all of these principles that we're applying to sound money can also apply to other assets. And I think when you're getting into like property rights and what it stands and what defines and what's ideal for a good money, I think there is room here to think about other assets, and they can benefit from the same set of principles.
Okay, let's get started on that. Property rights in general is something, I meant to have your tweet up, but you said, as being a maximalist, I must believe in property rights. And that's when I was just like, I'm not going to be able to explain this on Twitter. We're going to have a conversation, because I think there's a big difference in property rights being handled through a authority figure like a judge or law, and property rights being judged through the Bitcoin blockchain, in that if I hold my own keys, nobody can touch it. Not because an authority figure is saying, hey, you're not allowed to touch those keys, but because mathematically nobody can access my Bitcoin. So it's property rights in the sense of, this is, it cannot be stolen, right? So, and that's where I come back to the math part where 2 + 2 = 4, you can't steal my Bitcoin. And property rights, as far as, and this is where I might break off a lot of maybe maximalists or other people, I think everything else can be stolen. If it can be stolen, it will be stolen. And if it's only being property, if it's only property rights because of a law or an authority figure, then that means there's a trusted third party that needs to be involved. If you say my house is mine because I have a document saying that this house is mine, but then somebody comes with a gun to my head and says, no, this house is mine now, I can go to the law and say, hey, this guy is going to kill me and take my house. And if the law says it's my house, then I win. But I need it to go to another human that is also corruptible. Whereas with Bitcoin, somebody can come, put a gun to my head and say, hey, give me your Bitcoin. I can say no. And even if they shoot me, they can't take it. That's the major difference with Bitcoin being invented, that it's something that cannot be stolen, wherein everything else can be. So when it comes to property rights, it's not something that somebody's allowing you to have. It's something that just is. Would you agree with that or disagree?
No, I totally agree. The question I would ask, though, is what if Bitcoin... So you're familiar with the BRC20 standard, I assume?
I'm sort of. Like, you're more of a tech guy, is that right? And we'll have to get into this.
Not so. I mean, I don't know. I learned about Bitcoin in the end of 2013, and I mined a little Bitcoin, and I was involved in 2014, and I've been following the space ever since. And I ran power plants, like renewable power plants. So you could say I'm a somewhat technical guy, but I'm not a developer by any stretch.
Oh, okay. So you haven't developed your own blockchain projects or anything like that? You don't know that?
No, I'm highly involved in governance stuff. So I'm involved in quite a few different communities and definitely have a focus on governance as being something I find really interesting in different ways of doing democracy. But I understand like what the BRC20s are and what they stand for and how they're named after ERC20 for the Ethereum, you know, token standard. And basically it just means that now on Bitcoin currently today, ordinals are the sort of the actual name of these things, and it's NFTs on Bitcoin. So you can take the same property rights that you've ascribed to money that no one can put someone can put a gun to your head if they want, but it doesn't mean you're going to give them your seed phrase to move your Bitcoin. Like, it's yours. No one can touch that. Undeniably, I fully agree. The difference is now there's actually a way to put NFTs on that same decentralized ledger, but now it's not money. It's an NFT.
So I guess, yeah, let's get into your opinion on NFTs. What is an NFT? I'd like to hear your description of what an NFT is and whether you think it's valuable and why, what you see the future of NFTs being.
Well, you know, when did you get into Bitcoin? How long have you been kind of following it?
So Chris, I'm you're in the ring here with an absolute psychopath, okay? Like, I'm probably one of the most insane Bitcoiners on the internet. But I got in pretty hardcore at the end of 2020.
Okay.
So still relatively new, but right, Don't take that to mean that I haven't done my research.
I don't mean that at all. But so did you recall the term colored coins?
Yeah, absolutely. So okay. People, yeah.
Go ahead.
Colored coins were where you could add a color to a UTXO, right? And then people could discriminate. I don't know. That's not the word. Differentiate. Yeah. Between one coin and another coin, and you could prescribe different values to those if you so choose.
So right? That's essentially making, so instead of being a fungible token, they become a non-fungible token, meaning uniquely distinguishable. And that was on Bitcoin. Like, that's where I remember listening to like Adam Levine and the podcast that he was doing and talking this color coined idea. And that was the first NFT concept, basically, right? NFT just simply means non-fungible token. So it's still a token like Bitcoin is it, or Satoshi's at least the basic token. And so now you're just taking those fungible assets, which even I would argue Bitcoin's not fully fungible because it has a history that's fully verifiable on chain. So you can actually have kind of dirty tokens, for example. But anyway, without that nuance, generally we all understand it to be fungible. And so non-fungible just means the opposite, it's not. And so what you do with that, again, this is like a question of what does a technology allow versus what have we seen so far? I think all of these JPEGs that are represented by NFTs are a complete waste of time. I have not spent any money on those. I think they're absolutely, it's just a gimmick. It's a fad that will fade. But what is persistent is the technological aspect of having a token that is distinguishable from its other tokens on the same network. So now we have BRC20 tokens on the Bitcoin network itself that are that now can be comprised and individualized from other BRC20 tokens that live on the Bitcoin network, just using like the atomic unit, like just basic sats, right? So it's not actually much value, but it represents data that's stored on the blockchain now. And so what you do with those is more of the important question that I think we have to like consider. So me being a non-Bitcoin maxi, I see a use case. I think there's a lot of product market fit out there with the ability to have a not 100% centralized digital asset. So again, if we accept the fact that there's a bit of a spectrum between perfectly centralized and perfectly decentralized, if we move away from centralized and we want to now take digital assets, without going into the idea of like real world assets, like I want to tokenize my boat and then I want to sell, you know, usage of my boat, like forget that because it's a real world thing. At some point in time, you have to tie in the real world laws that ascribe to property ownership and then put those on a blockchain. That's really difficult to do. But when you take digital assets, like an in-game item, which is really how this whole thing started, you take an in-game item, like a skin in Fortnite, for example, and you can now give ownership to that digital item and you tie that to an NFT. So that's now where you have this digital item represented by an NFT that someone owns. And so that opens up a whole world of possibilities where you can take the property rights of sound money that you've applied to Bitcoin and now take that same kind of revolution in property rights, right? And apply that to other digital assets. And so then I think the question is, are Bitcoin maxis being a bit myopic in their view of this technology, which is a blockchain, and it only can be applied to money? That's it. That's the only use case. And to me, I think it's going to prove to be wrong. I mean, it's going to be wrong. It's guaranteed because digital asset ownership is not going away. The skins market is $50 billion a year right now. And that's based on no one getting to actually keep and self-custody their assets, right? Like Epic Games owns all your skins that you buy on Fortnite. They can close their servers, turn it all off, you get nothing. Meanwhile, it's $50 billion a year globally in all these different assets. So when those skins can start to be owned by individuals and they can take those skins and trade them with each other and have secondary marketplaces and rent them for passive income, all of that becomes possible. And the same property right piece that we love about Bitcoin can now be applied to these other digital assets.
Okay, so yeah, that's I can definitely understand where you're coming from. My question for you would be, if you see that there's already a skins market, to use your example, that's your number was $50 billion that kids are buying and selling, and
not selling, just buying, right?
So people are buying skins online right now, and I used to be a pretty hardcore gamer. I bought Are you much of a gamer yourself?
I used to play WoW quite a bit, but now I'm in my 40s and I have a 12-year-old son who's playing Fortnite that I like wish he didn't because I know how much time. I don't game anymore. I used to, but I stopped.
No, okay, I hear you. So here's my critical issue with it is that Bitcoin solved the problem of money. We had an issue with money and there was a problem that needed to be solved. Bitcoin solved that problem. Right now, there is a market and there is a way for people to buy skins to use them in game by a centralized server that either Fortnite is running, or if you build up a WoW character that's really awesome and you don't want to use him anymore, you can sell him on the open market and give somebody your data to get onto that profile. They change the password and then they own that character. So the way I see it is that there's no problem to be solved, which is where my frustration becomes. It's like, if there's no problem to be solved, why are you trying to add a solution via blockchain tech?
Well, I mean, I think it's about how good is the solution that currently exists to that problem? So is it the best solution? Because a lot of the attributes that we love about Bitcoin could be said about gold, right? We know the analogy of digital gold. Well, gold isn't, I mean, it's a solution to the currency problem of the world, sure, but it's not practical. Right? It's tough to come up with change. It's not very portable. Like we all know the reasons why gold is not nearly as good as Bitcoin. So there was a solution to the fiat money problem, but Bitcoin was a better solution. So to your point of, you can actually still sell some of your skins in a secondary market, but it's illegal. And if you get caught by the game developer, your account will be banned. So yeah, I guess there's a solution, but is it the optimal solution? And the other thing is just in terms of product market fit, the game developers who recognize that this is a huge market, skins market, if gamers realize that they can buy skins in a different game and actually monetize the ownership of those skins, do we not think that people might play that game more? So once one of these legacy Web 2 games, gaming studios, comes out with a Web 3 enabled game. So again, some people don't like that term Web 3. They think it's a scam just to use the term, but it's not. If you agree with the idea of a gradient of what decentralized means, right? So I totally agree that I would not keep the type of value I would keep on the Bitcoin blockchain on one of these other blockchains that happens to also have digital in-game items. Like, they're just not in the same scale. Like, I don't walk around with all the money I have in my possession in my wallet, like my physical cash. I don't. Like, a couple $100, I'll walk around with that, but not all my money. So clearly there's levels of security that we're willing to entertain with our assets. And so digital assets should be no different. The vast majority of our assets, sure, that goes on Bitcoin. No argument from me. But if you want to start to monetize gaming assets and you're going to spend money on a skin that you're basically just pissing away if Epic or Blizzard or whomever can just turn off the server and end the game. But if you can now say, oh no, I'm going to buy this skin, but dad, I get to keep this thing. And it might go up in value because there's only 1,000 of them being minted because it's verifiable on this, not perfectly decentralized blockchain, but semi-decentralized blockchain. And so I can verify that there's only 1,000 of these and I think they're going to be really popular. So I'm going to buy it because it might go up in value. Like, that's a solution that doesn't exist yet. So, well, at least it's a problem that exists, arguably, in terms of product market fit, that doesn't yet have a really well proliferated solution. There hasn't really been a good Web3 game, quote unquote, that people have captured. And that's a lot of that tweet that you saw, that interview that I was on with Roundtable Media that led to that tweet. That interview was about this one blockchain that I won't shill any chains, but this one blockchain that did a relationship with GameStop, and GameStop was going to, they're planning, as we know, to release a Web3 enabled game launcher, similar to Steam, but it's going to be Web3 enabled. So clearly GameStop sees something in the marketplace that has an opportunity and they're going after it. So that's why I think there's something here that I don't think there is quite the solution that you've suggested. Like, yes, there's a workaround, but it's not really the best solution. And there's still an opportunity to expand this marketplace.
So I guess a couple concerns that I have there is, one of the things you bring up is, okay, so a kid buys a skin on Fortnite and then Fortnite turns off the servers. In your example, he has the NFT of the skin. Yep. But if the game's not running, then the value of that skin goes to zero regardless, because why would somebody buy a quote unquote NFT for a game that doesn't exist anymore? It wouldn't make sense.
No, but this is where humans are awesome at inventing new things. So a lot of these games, so for example, if I don't know what the graphic engine is that Fortnite, it might be Unreal Engine. Like, a lot of games, we'll use this example, a lot of games use Unreal Engine. And so what that means is the 3D rendering of the object is just data, right? There's just data that represents a shield. So say you're going to buy a shield or whatever, you earn a shield even on a quest or something in a game that uses Unreal Engine. And that shield is now attached to your wallet, your crypto wallet on whatever platform you happen to have a wallet. It's probably MetaMask because everything's EVM compatible. And then what happens is, in the metadata of that NFT, there is the information required to render that 3D object in any game that uses Unreal Engine that wishes to accept that standard. So now you can actually take that asset that looks like a shield in Warcraft or whatever, and now you can re-render that asset in a different game. It may not have any functional value, which most skins don't. They're just a skin. But you can still actually take that item, have it re-render in a different game, and then show off your cool 10-year-old shield that no one has because you got it on the first version of this stuff that ever came out, and you kept the NFT in your wallet. So I totally see your point, but there's actually a solution to that. And these things can start to persist for generations, assuming that that it's always backwards compatible in terms of the 3D rendering ability.
So I guess, okay, so trying to stick to your example here. So, okay, I bought a shield in Fortnite and then Fortnite goes offline. It's a decade later. I pass mm-hmm. the shield on to my kid and he's playing Fortnite 2.
So whatever game. Around with, totally what different it, name. That's right.
Sure. Okay. He's playing Night Fort 2, right?
Yeah.
What is stopping, okay, thing number one, what's stopping the creator of that game to just program a similar shield if they want to, making your rare shield no longer rare anymore, because they can just create more shields or better shields or different shields. And then you have this NFT of the shield, but so does everybody else if that's what they want to do, because they're the owner of the game. So
they could do that. Sure. I mean, that's always a possibility. But if I'm a game designer making Nightfort, right, and I want to capture some of those old gamers who all got sucked into Fortnite and pull them into my game, because there's always competition between games and gaming studios to draw on the greatest market share. So would you make it so that, hey, I'm going to totally copy what you had and make it not special anymore, so fuck off, we don't want you here. or not. They might say, hey, in fact, we love what you have, and you've got this whole arsenal of digital items. Bring it to our game, and they can be used there. The other thing is, like, the digital items themselves, I mean, they have a serial number, right? Like, they live on a blockchain. They're not, even though it might visually look the same, it doesn't mean it's the same. It'll be, you can look at someone's wallet and see, no, this is an authentic, true Fortnite from 10 years ago shield, a special limited edition Iron Man, whatever, right? Like, that's how this is going to go. Like, even now, I watch how my kids, my son plays Fortnite, and he looks at these skins, and I think it's completely ridiculous. Like, it doesn't even affect your gameplay. Why would you care what you looked like? But somehow kids today care. And so I think they will also care if something's a knockoff or not, because they can tell.
Do you think they'll care if it's a knockoff? That I guess that's the next question. Like, it all comes down to, I have a couple of questions that I want to ask you just to kind of get a feel of who you are. Like, where do you think value objective or subjective? In my view, all value is just subjective. Would you agree with that?
Basically, yes. It depends what you mean by value, right? Like, love is, like, there's some human interactions that I think are more objective, I guess. But for the most part, yes. Generally speaking, yes, value is certainly subjective. We can't deny that.
Interesting. And then where do you stand on, and if I have to ask any questions that are too personal, you don't want to answer, that's fine. I can edit it out. But
yeah.
I'm just kind of curious what your political leaning is, or because I would say that I'm more an anarchist type. So when you say something is illegal, you're not allowed to sell it online, I'd put up two middle fingers and say, I'll sell whatever I want, whenever I want. So where do you stand? Are you more?
No, I mean, I think taxation is theft, and I'm probably more of a libertarian, if anything, if I was to put myself in a bucket, you know, so fiscally conservative, socially liberal, but I'm not a huge fan of, you know, socialism as far as being socially liberal. Like, I don't, you know, so that's more the fiscal conservative side, but, like, yeah, I don't care if gay people want to get married. I don't, you know, so I'm pretty easy. I don't love state, but I also think that we live in a society. And so it's just like even if you had a small tribe of 10 people, you're going to come up with some set of rules that you are all going to agree to live on, right? There's going to be just certain expectations that you're going to carry as humans. Like, humans, as much as we want to be without rulers, you still have to have rules. And so at some point, someone's going to have to enforce those rules. So it's a fight. I don't think, like, it's kind of wishful thinking to just pure anarchy. Because you got to have rules at some point in time, because we're humans and we need to interact with each other on some sort of level playing field. Otherwise, it's just might makes right. And ooga booga, I have a bigger club than you, so I win. I mean, that's not a world I want to live in.
It's not a world I want to live in either, but I just think it's the natural way of life. In my personal opinion, I think that's just the way things are. It'd be nice if there was some omnipresent lord that could be just and fair in all things, but that's just not the way humans work. So that's the way I see life.
But yeah, it's up to us. But I mean, that's the whole. Like, so right now, but if you lived in a tribe, like if you use that thought, you know the airplane, you get lost on a desert island. You know, whether it's what's the movie with the kids that happened on, and then
Lord of the Flies,
right? Yeah, so that happens. Like, clearly, it didn't work out for them too well. They get rescued, of course, but it was a bit of a shit show. So if they were better at coming to consensus amongst themselves around, okay, how should we operate? Maybe the coming to consensus is the dude with the biggest club is like, it's my rules. Okay, fine. But that doesn't have to be the way that groups can arrive at group consensus to settle on some form of structure. So, I mean, I see your point. That's usually how it devolves into the law of the jungle. But I think humans, with our capacity and intellectual prowess, have ways to come up with better solutions that are little more fruitful and probably give us all generally a better quality of life if we could do it. But everything's corrupted now anyway. Like elections are mostly, I mean, they're selections, they're pre-selections. It's a joke. Like, we don't live in a true, it's democracy in name only anyway. So I'm sure you won't disagree with any of that.
No, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I definitely agree. I just, I think I stand alone in saying I think the guy with the biggest stick is always going to be the leader. It just seems like that's the way that it goes. And that's why, not to devolve this conversation into an anarchist discussion.
No, sadly, you're right, though. I don't disagree with you. Unfortunately, it is the way it goes.
Yeah, I want to get back to the NFT thing. So
yep.
I guess what you're saying is, see, this is my issue with NFTs or tokens in general, BRC tokens. Anybody can whip up another BRC token. The reason Bitcoin is valuable to me individually is that there's only 21 million. You can't make any more. And it's got the biggest network effect of people running it. It's got the most hash power of any network. So that means that there's the most people working to keep it secure and decentralized at the same time. Whereas with any given new BRC token that comes up, is going to be created by an individual that will be able to corrupt that to their way that they want to. So if you make a BRC 20 token and then you add some ordinals or NFTs to it, anybody can, who's ever in charge of that protocol can manipulate that protocol to their will and desire, because, and I guess that's where we disagreed at the start. I think Bitcoin continues to get decentralized, whereas all other chains, because Bitcoin is always going to look for the most hash power, all the other chains, everything else would become more centralized towards most like the creator of any given chain. And so that they'll always be able to be in control of that chain. So your kid buys an NFT that's got a skin attached to it, but eventually that chain goes under because nobody's running the code for it. And then the person that creates that chain can just take all those tokens as they please.
At that point, they're probably not worth anything either. So no, you're right. I mean, that is one of the downsides of anything that is in Bitcoin, is it may not have the permanence, but that's, again, it's all about product market fit and what you're solving for. Like, if you're just solving for digital in-game items, because there's a clear market, like we know there's a market for skins, $50 billion a year. So it seems kind of unarguable to suggest that you gamers will want to play games if they can better monetize their ability to play that game. And so earning in-game items that are attached to NFTs that live on any blockchain, doesn't have to be on Bitcoin. I think the Bitcoin like BRC20 is just an interesting kind of mind trick for many maxis, because now they kind of have to accept that this NFT thing actually lives on their own chain. Whether it's a good NFT, which is kind of where you're getting after, right? And could the designer and the developer of the NFT change the rules partway through? Potentially, depends how they designed it. But if they null the keys out and they create scarce supply and there's no way to then go back and edit the code, then it's still hard. If it lives on Bitcoin, on the BRC20 standard, then you certainly are inheriting that decentralized, all the aspects you just pointed out about why Bitcoin gets even more decentralized. Those tokens will inherit it. Doesn't mean they're good tokens, and it doesn't mean you should hold your value there. But again, I just go back to this very strict product market fit that exists. And so it's just like, to me, it's inevitable. Like, it's going to happen. And that's the thing. This is just one example, but there's other reasons why blockchains can be useful. There's other industries that can benefit from this form of immutability and more decentralized than purely centralized. So again, along this gradient, there's lots. I mean, there's all sorts of different assets and warranty cards and like wills could be on a blockchain now. Like I'm Canada, but now I'm in Mexico. My will that I had in Canada doesn't apply here, but if there was some sort of international blockchain that they could have that on, well, now it can apply here. Like, there's all sorts of ways of efficiencies that can be gained from the technology that is blockchain that I think we have to be considerate of. And it's, again, kind of just close-minded to think, no, it's only going to be money. That's it. That's all forever. No technology, no, especially nothing as revolutionary as what Bitcoin is, has ever remained relegated to just one little thing. Like, humans are very creative. We end up coming up with other use cases, even though it may not be the original use case, and it can't ever claim to be. Like, again, Bitcoin is the hard money. I will never disagree with that, but it doesn't mean I can't keep 2% of my value in some other chain because it's part of my gaming assets.
Yeah, no, I think you're free to do with your money whatever you want to do with. If you want to put it in whatever chain you want, go ahead and do that. I'm a maximalist in that. Yeah, all my money's in Bitcoin because I think it's the only thing that will ever actually appreciate in value, because it's the only thing that has value. Everything else, it can be stolen from you. And everything else, so with your will example, this is the other thing that I don't get. I won't say shitcoiners. I'll crypto people say.
You can say shitcoiners. Okay.
I'm trying to be nice here, Chris, but yeah, it's like, all good. In order for, okay, so a will is only valuable. And by the way, I'm in Canada as well. I was living in Ontario and I moved out to Alberta about a year and a half ago. So it's a good time here. But
I just left the country, but I would have gone to Alberta if I wasn't.
I feel you, man. Yeah, I was thinking of moving down south as well, but it was a little bit pricier than just coming out this way. So that's the next step for me. But definitely we're on the same page there, at least as well. So with the... Are you a believer that you can tokenize everything? Because that's one issue that I take a real issue with, because in order for a token to have any value, it just means that the two people involved looking at the token have to abide by the law of whatever it says. So I have an ordinal and it says, when I die, I want $50 to go to this kid and $50 to go to my niece and whatever. And if somebody that's in law looks at it and says, yeah, I don't give a shit about this will, then it doesn't matter anyways. It's shocking to me, honestly, that wills have lasted as long as they have, that the rule of law has lasted as long as it has. And maybe that's because we both grew up in a first world country and, you know, law was still good. But you go anywhere else where things are corrupt, no piece of paper, no document, no contract is going to hold up. People are going to take what they want to take, whether that contract is on a blockchain or not. I can read the contract on a blockchain and I can still just put two middle fingers up to it and not care about it. What is interesting in contrast to that is I can program my sats to go to somebody I want them to go to and do premeditated transfers, which is still like kind of in the future. I haven't looked too much into it, but I do know that's coming. But that's something that's actually on-chain programmed that doesn't take a human to look at and verify. It's just on-chain. This is a program. It's going to run when it runs. And or I can write down my seed phrase on a piece of paper, hide it somewhere, tell my kid where to find it if and when I die, and say, this is your money. Go find that piece of paper and now it's yours. But if I write down on a contract that says, I want my son to receive, you know, X Bitcoins when I die, any lawmaker can just say this contract is invalid. Just like you said, when you went from Canada to Mexico, what happened to that contract? It doesn't exist anymore. It only exists in the realm that Canada is a country. And I guess, yeah, we won't go too far down that route, but like if the country ceased to exist, then the only law that applies is that of anarchy anyways, where people have to agree on a set of rules, and if you don't, then you can take whatever you want. The only thing you can't take is sats. So the whole contract thing I don't get, because it doesn't matter whether or not it's on a blockchain. All that matters is the people that are involved. So the blockchain aspect of it doesn't solve any problem, in my opinion.
It can make things... No, it doesn't. It's not a like the silver bullet. Because everything you said is totally true. I mean, especially when we're trying to relate digital items to real world items, there's always going to be the ability for someone to just come with a gun and take the real world item. It doesn't matter if it has a digital representation or not. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of pointless that way. But it's, you know, those are extremes. So if we want to argue the extremes, 100%, I get your point. But if we want to live somewhere in the middle where the extreme Canada hasn't fallen apart and neither has Mexico or whatever, if they had a relationship between their governing bodies to say, this is going to be our source of truth. Like, again, that's one of the big things that blockchains provide for, is this trustless nature of a ledger that we all can both parties can agree is true. Well, then I can facilitate things that are outside of the nation. So that if we can have nations work together, it can just facilitate that. It doesn't mean it's some great use case, but it's a use case. And there's lots of other assets that could fit into that same kind of bucket. But you're right. I mean, and the idea of leaving your Bitcoin, one of the ways you could do it is you'd have like an MSIG, right? So you'd have an MSIG that says that when I die, my Bitcoin go to this receiving wallet. The problem is you still have to have some form of oracle to feed that MSIG that says, yeah, Jeff died. And so you have some sort of third party arbiter there, right? Like, and maybe your receiving party would sign one of the two of three MSIG, and then you would have a key on that. And then there'd be like a third party arbiter who would say, yes, it's true. I've looked at the deficit good, but that's still going back to real world humans who have to engage to make that transfer happen. Like the Bitcoin blockchain is not going to be able to check some record and know that you kicked it, right? It's not possible. So there's always going to, like, this is the thing, like, there's always humans involved. Like, we're protecting the value that we as humans have. We're storing it on a Bitcoin blockchain. Like, we're storing it as Bitcoin, but it still goes back to us. Like, it's still at some point in time, everything has to come back to us as humans, and whether our quality of life is being affected by this and our ability to transmit and share value, right? So you can't remove the human from all of this, even though we want to remove the ability to trust anybody.
Yeah, I agree. You can't remove the human from any aspect of humans interacting with each other, which is why I like Bitcoin, because you don't need a human to verify it. So again, I guess I bring it back to what's the problem with current contracts? They're working just fine. The wills are working as they are, and it seems like the next logical step would be to have, and this is where maybe a lot of Maxis will disagree with me as well, or crypto people. I think centralization is a good thing in almost all aspects of this. I think one central authority, whip up a business, call it Wills R Us, right? And have a central server that people have their wills on, and then have a business and be like, hey, I made a will with Wills R Us. This is where my will is. Why would you want it to be decentralized? Why would you want it to be on a blockchain rather than at a centralized server that somebody is in control of and can acquire whenever they need to? Why do you think decentralized?
Then you have to trust them. I mean, like anything, it's like the reason why you like Bitcoin is because you don't have to trust any central authority who's keeping track of the ledger. You have a decentralized network and you don't have to trust any single party. If you keep your will at Wills R Us that's owned by Bob, well, what if Bob gets corrupted? There goes all those wills. I mean, so there's a clear use case to want to put this data on something that's not centralized, so it can't be changed. The other thing is just it's cheaper. So when you do something on a like smart contracts, once you create the smart contract, you can rinse and repeat that over and over again. So there's an efficiency there where I don't have to go to a lawyer necessarily to have a will drawn up. I can just go to this blockchain app that's being run on a decentralized network, fill out all the fields, upload my ID, and now I've done it for $10 versus, you know, $500 or whatever a will costs. So there's that too. And that, again, this is just a will example, but you can take this to any sort of piece of property that you might want to then put a deed or a copy of a deed on a blockchain that you don't have to trust some central authority. And maybe even just the idea of if you lose something, like maybe a fire happens and all the stuff gets burnt down in your house and you don't want to trust putting everything on Google Drive or something, right? You could put data on a blockchain. Like there's different types of blockchains that that focus on data. Like, that's the one thing about a lot of blockchains, right? You can't put a lot of data on them, but some use different consensus mechanism like proof of capacity. And so they are like basically decentralized like IPFS, but it's a blockchain and using people's hard drives from around the world. And that's also quite decentralized, in fact, because
I'll have to stop you for a hard drive. Second there. What's IPSF?
IPFS is the Interplanetary File System. So okay. It's basically a decentralized storage system, but it's you still have to kind of pay to have access to it. So yeah, if you look up IPFS, it's just decentralized. It's kind of like
it's another blockchain, BitTorrent. I guess.
It's not even a blockchain. It's just like a internet protocol. Okay. From my understanding.
Cool. Okay.
And it's not tied to a blockchain at all. But there are blockchain protocols that are working on data storage. And some of them are quite clever, in fact, where now anybody with a hard drive can be a node and participate to instead of having to have like an ASIC, which is very specialized and pointless other than solving SHA-256 hashes, you can use just the hard drive on your computer that you're not taking advantage fully of and connect to the network and you become a node.
Can I ask you, okay, so again, if you don't want to answer questions, you don't have to, but I look at Bitcoin, I see people are incentivized to run Bitcoin because they want to verify their transactions. I see people are incentivized to mine Bitcoin because they want their hash going towards something that's valuable. What I don't see is people incentivized to run these other chains. I don't know why somebody would choose to run the code for some chain other than the developer of that chain. So my question to you is, can you explain how you incentivize people to run those chains? And then also, if you're open to it, can you tell me how many nodes you have for different chains? Because I'm just curious if maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people are out there running different chains on their computers.
So the incentivization is typically through tokenomics. So often there's a native token tied to the respective blockchain, and you earn those tokens based on your contribution to whatever their consensus mechanism. So for Bitcoin, you add hash power, you get rewarded with Bitcoin if you mine a block. Ethereum, when it was proof of work, was the same thing. Proof of stake is a little different, right? Where now you have chains where you earn tokens via inflationary mechanisms to produce the blocks, essentially, but it's not competitive. So I was a Bitcoin maxi up until, and I missed, so I went to like the Toronto Expo in 2014, for example, and that was when Ethereum, I heard about it then, but I heard about the tokenomics, and there was like this 30% pre-mine for the owners, and I was like, oh my God, 70%. I'm not going, how much was it?
I believe it was 70%. That's the number goes around the Bitcoin circle.
Okay, that's whatever. What? There you go. Yeah. So I've mixed the 37. Yeah. So it's just stupid. I was like, I want no part of this chain. I don't care. I clearly was wrong. I could have bought it at $2 and I didn't. And so, you know, market wise, I made a mistake. But principle wise, I didn't want to support something that had a pre-mine. But then I realized at the time that, well, wait a minute, there is something here about programmable blockchain and smart contracts. Like, there is something to this tech that's more than just functioning as money, again, breaking away from being a pure Bitcoin maxi. And then I learned about EOS when it was doing its crowd sale and when it was going to do half a second block time, where Bitcoin's a 10-minute block time, and often you need three confirmations, if not more, before you can really assure yourself that the transaction's through. So you're looking at 30 to 60 minutes for a transaction. Well, that's not going to work to run a social media app on, or gaming, right? If you want to in-game assets, you want to trade them, do things quickly. So it made sense. Like, okay, wait, this blockchain makes more sense. It's half a second block time. And its consensus mechanism was called delegated proof of stake. So DPoS, as opposed to just straight up proof of stake. And the way it worked was, you would, as a token holder, you would vote for a block producer or validator. And based on all the token holders, they just vote for these different validators that have registered on the network, and they just self-sort where the top 21 produce the blocks. Bitcoin, any node, I could have just a basic shitty computer still hashing, and maybe I could win the lottery and actually mint a block, right? So any node on Bitcoin can produce a block. In these proof of stake or delegated proof of stake mechanism chains, it's not like that. Only the ones that are receiving enough votes will then be able to produce blocks in an orderly fashion. So that's that trade-off, because it's a clear trade-off of decentralization here, 21 nodes versus the thousands and thousands of nodes that you have for Bitcoin. So clearly not as decentralized. No one would argue that. But the trade-off is that you get now half a second block time and you can do thousands of transactions a second. So that trade-off leads to other use cases that otherwise wouldn't exist. So that's where I started to understand these other bits. So in terms of nodes, I run a node. I learned how, and I haven't done this, but I finally have run a node on it's actually called Bitcoin Libre, which uses the same tech as EOS, but it's a layer two scaling solution for Bitcoin. And that chain is just on the verge. In the next month or so, it's going to come out with a DEX for BRC20s. That's basically going to help BRC20s scale for Bitcoin, because it's just adding too much congestion. And you can't really run a DEX with 10-minute block times. Like, it's just not going to happen on Bitcoin. But
can you explain what a DEX is?
A decentralized exchange. So instead of a centralized exchange, it's a decentralized exchange that's running strictly on basically smart contracts. And there's just a live order book. And a user can log in and then buy or sell tokens without ever having to KYC or go through any central authority. But there's no fiat on and off ramps usually, right? Because there's no bank account. It's not centralized that way. It's decentralized. So BRC20s, they're around. They're not going away. Ordinals are a thing on Bitcoin now. And if you want to keep using that as a money thing, then you don't want it all being congested with these idiots selling NFTs, right? So one of the advantages, again, this is like a scaling solution. So you're going to lose that the kind of the hardened decentralized strong blockchain that is Bitcoin with your BRC20s, and you're going to move those off and put them in a layer two solution that isn't as decentralized. There's greater risk involved, but now you can trade for basically nearly free transactions, and you can exchange with others for these digital items, and then basically you go off chain, you go off of the Bitcoin blockchain onto this secondary network, and then you can send it back. And you take back possession, just like if you send Bitcoin to a centralized exchange, you no longer have the keys, okay, but you still kind of have your tokens. They're just on a centralized exchange until Mt. Gox happens, which you probably never, you didn't hear about that one probably in 2013. But so it's the same thing. But I spun up a node for that, and it wasn't too hard. It was a bit of Linux. I had someone who was more of a developer help me do it, and now I'm running a node on that blockchain, for example. This capacity stuff, I've just last week, and I don't often dabble in other chains, but this one came across my view, and I looked at it. It's really interesting. It's still in its testnet. It's not live. There's no token generation event yet. It's called Subspace. Like, I'm just a random dude. I'm not a community member or whatever, so I don't mind mentioning the name. But it uses this proof of archival storage, they call it, and anybody who has a computer can basically follow basic instructions, Windows, Mac, or whatever, Linux, if you want, and set up a node. And you partition part of your hard drive for it, and you can start earning rewards, whatever. I don't even know what that's going to be. But it's interesting because now you're taking, and their niche, which is also quite interesting when we think of these different products that are existing. AI is a thing that we're learning about, and who knows what the hell it's going to do. One of the issues with AI as an individual, and you probably feel this way as an anarchist, is you're probably pretty data concerned. Like, where does your data go? I'm sure you probably don't have one of those Siri things that's listening to you, right? I sure shit don't. But so when I want to interact with AI, and there's these things called personal assistants that can basically use these AI tools, which are crazy. I don't know if you've used ChatGPT or Midjourney for images.
Yeah, I've used it a couple times. Yeah.
It's nuts. It's nuts what it can do, right? So one of the things that there's these personal assistants that are getting developed where they can help you be more efficient with your life. But in order to do that, you've got to get it. You got to get information about your life, and you have to like actually feed it information to then give back ways to make you more efficient. Well, then, okay, where's that data going? I don't want to give it up. Well, now this blockchain, apparently they're going to be able to allow you to upload, because it's a data storage site, so they can take all sorts of data. You can interact with that, load information about yourself onto this site in a quote unquote trustless manner where it's private. So you can choose to reveal your privacy, your information about you to other developers. Like it's shrouded under like a ZK type of roll-up type thing. And so I think that's an interesting use case where now I can have a personal assistant AI style on this particular chain and not have to necessarily give up all my personal data because I can keep possession of it.
Interesting.
So I'll probably spin up a node for that. I haven't yet, but I have a feeling I'm going to try because it seems like a neat idea, and I've got a computer with hard drive space. So why not?
So why do you need a blockchain for that though?
Because otherwise it's centralized. So anytime, I mean, would I trust some central company like Google could do this? Hey, trust us, give us all your data, and we're going to give you a personal AI assistant. You don't get to monetize it. So by giving up your hard drive, you don't get any tokens. You don't make any money out of it, but you can still use AI and you can trust us. That's why. So now when it goes onto a blockchain, I no longer have to trust a single authority. I can look at the code itself or trust someone else that's going to look at the code. And there's an incentivization model where if I give up part of my hard drive for this, I can earn tokens. So that's just a clear reason why it's better than just a central option.
Okay. So here's one conflicting issue I have with sort of your message you're trying to get across. You're saying blockchain isn't just used for money. Okay, fine. I'll stand with you. I can reason with that. But then you keep coming back to, you get tokens that you can sell for money. So it seems like that's kind of conflicting in that you want blockchain to be used for all these other reasons, but then you still come back to with the NFTs or the game assets or anything else. You're saying, well, I want to run this network so that I can get these tokens, tokenomics, I get a bunch of tokens, and then I can sell those for money. So it still comes back to being economically driven by any given individual that wants to run these things. You still want to gain these tokens in the hopes that you'll be able to sell them for money someday.
some of the, yeah, that's one of the incentives. This AI thing, like I don't think you have to run a node. In fact, I'm pretty sure you don't. You don't have to run a node to have the personal AI and to leverage the storage of this particular network to then have an AI. So it doesn't have to be about money in that case. But yeah, of course, if there's money, quote unquote, to be made, and you can rest assured, if I earn tokens on these other chains, I'm going to convert it to Bitcoin just like any other person would who wants to actually store their value. So, but that doesn't mean that the original use case that led me to earn those tokens that I traded for Bitcoin, that doesn't mean there was nothing there. Like, again, the gaming items, I think, is the clearest example where I'm a gamer. I'm going to buy these skins or win the skin. I don't even have to buy it. I could earn it in a game. And I want to take that and I'm going to sell it. I mean, so I played the game. I love playing the game. It was good fun. And now I got this thing and it's like, I'm going to rent it out for a little while first and then I'm going to sell it. And what am I going to sell it for? What currency? Well, it's up to me. If I'm smart, I'll probably choose Bitcoin, but I may not. I might choose USDT or I might this new PayPal stablecoin that they made, who knows? But the point is that this the act of earning that digital item and the fact that it was scarce means it was valuable. So that's also the scarcity piece, right? So you can encode scarcity on a blockchain for particular digital items where if it's a central server, how do I know that it's actually going to be scarce? So that's, again, I think one of the things that blockchain, that's a value prop that we want to leverage in other industries other than just money.
Yeah, so I guess it comes back to like, again, I understand that I'm a completely psychotic Bitcoin maximalist, but the end result of every one of your examples is that somebody's selling these tokens to get Bitcoin because they realize that Bitcoin's the best money. So yep. Why wouldn't an individual, and this was my realization for why I want Bitcoin, why wouldn't I just buy the Bitcoin now while I can still get it cheap rather than buying a shield or making a will or, you know, having a property thing? Why don't I just buy sats now and then be done with it? It doesn't make sense.
Because quality of life matters. I mean, it's all about why buy a car? Well, because I got to get places. Well, but you could just buy Bitcoin. But if you want to get places, like
sell your shares. Yeah, no, I get you.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's all about, I mean, again, it's the human piece. Like, where we're here not just to aggregate value and collect quote unquote money. Like, we're here to live, and life is about experiences and memories matter. And so I played a game and I get to pick which games I want to play, right? I choose my game, and if I know that there's a game that I can actually earn some value back from, like, that's a game but meanwhile, it's basically the same as the next game. Like, I'm going to pick the one I can earn some value. So it's like, so my enjoyment is playing the game and the value is on a blockchain. I know it's scarce. It's provably scarce. There's only so many of these items. I just earned one. I'm going to sell it on the marketplace now. And I'm going to sell it for Bitcoin because that's how I'd like to store my value. But there's still like the enjoyment piece of playing the game. Like, you can't just all be about sitting on a chair and somehow trying to collect Bitcoin. Like, you still got to do something, right?
Yeah, you got to enjoy your life. Absolutely. I think that's fair. I think people should buy things that make them happy. It's just, okay, so I buy a shield for my character. I have fun with it for my 10 years of my life, and then I sell it to somebody else. In your theory, do you think it's going to be worth more than what I paid for 10 years ago or less? And then after that, the person that buys it from me, is it going to be worth more or less? Eventually, everything trends to zero, in my view. If I bought a shield from somebody, if somebody had a shield for 10 years, I'm not going to spend more sats on it than they did originally. I can't imagine somebody doing that. Do you?
Well, collectibles are a funny thing. Yeah. I mean, I collected hockey cards pretty avidly when in my youth, and some of those cards are still worth a lot of money today, and they're worth more than they were when I bought them 20 years ago. So this is all about the, you asked earlier if I thought value was subjective, and it is. And so collectibles are a great example of the subjectivity of value. And so it just depends. If something turns out to have been really popular, and then a movie comes out 10 years later and it pays homage to that old thing, and all of a sudden now everyone wants this one digital collectible that a lot of people lost because they didn't care about their wallets, now there's even less of them in circulation, yeah, the value could go up for sure. But I mean, I think there's a possibility, whether it will or not, and whether it applies to all digital assets. No, of course not. But there's going to be outliers, just like, you know, think of any physical item collectors care about, right? I mean, stamps, probably not as popular anymore, but I mean, even the NFTs, the fact that NFTs are worth so much money speaks to how stupid people are when it comes to digital items. I mean, at least an NFT was nothing. I mean, you could just copy paste the stupid thing. At least in an in-game item, I can tangibly take the ownership of that NFT and play a game, and my gaming experience would be like objectively different because I have that item, because then I'm playing with it versus if I didn't. NFTs is a JPEG, that makes no sense. I mean,
so let me ask you this then. Okay, so I have a NFT of my shield, and I was following your idea that you can program the Unreal Engine program into it so that when you go in game, the program runs and then it pops up. But in order to put, right? I'm following that correctly, right?
The metadata. Yeah, it's more like the ability to render that object in a 3D space in Unreal Engine can be portable between games that use Unreal Engine. Yeah, you're basically right. Yeah.
So if that data is on the blockchain and the blockchain is available to everyone, what's stopping me, an attacker, from going into that NFT, looking at it, copy-pasting the metadata, and then just making another NFT, and then I just stole your shield?
No, but it's not the same. That's like saying, that's when people say Bitcoin's not, like when Peter Schill says he hates Bitcoin because people can just go take the code and copy-paste it like Litecoin. And so why does Bitcoin matter? I can just copy-paste it. It's because people know. We pay attention. We know what block, we know what ledger to look at and what's real and what isn't. And that same analogy would apply here.
Sorry, just give me 2 seconds. My son just ran into the room. I'll be back in like 30 seconds.
Okay, no problem.
Sorry, apologies about that.
No problem.
You kind of came in while you were in the middle of that rant. Just refresh me. You were saying something about Litecoin. We were talking about the metadata of the thing. So
yeah, you were saying basically someone could just copy paste the data, and then why does it matter if you have the original one, if I could just make a copy of it and then have that same image, right? And so my point was that guys like Peter Schiff would often say that Bitcoin isn't worth anything because he can just copy paste it and run up the code on someone else's computer, call it Petercoin. So Bitcoin's not special. And look, Litecoin, they did the exact same thing, right? And but the answer is, well, that's bullshit, because the users know. We know what the real blockchain is. That is the Bitcoin blockchain. And even though it gets confusing with like the SegWit version and like BSC and all these other versions of Bitcoin, we know what the real one is. And so users will have the same ability to know what the real digital items are of the future in the same way, because it'll all be encoded back to an original, like on the proper blockchain with the proper like digital certificate. Like you can't falsify that.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess my next issue with that would be the reason that people, and I could be wrong here too, but I think the reason that Bitcoin is Bitcoin is because it's got the biggest network effect. And so that's something extremely hard to overtake. So with these digital assets, if there's one guy that says, I have the original shield, but there's 10 other guys that say, whatever, the secondary one is better. And then there's 100 other people that say, oh, actually the tertiary one's better. You know, it's like,
It'll be a mint number, but all
that matters is what the biggest network effect of people think is the coolest one. And I think that'll devolve to nobody. And this is my toxicity coming. I think nobody will care. I think nobody will care about which one's the quote unquote real one.
It's like, I mean, you could make fakes of the Wayne Gretzky rookie card. People care. Like, no, there's people who their job is about making sure it's an authentic, actual, the real deal, not an imposter. So no, I think people will care. I mean, we don't know for sure. We're talking future state here, but I think if what we see in other collectibles is evidence of what we might see here, I think folks will care. And the network effect thing, you're totally right. I mean, that's the other thing. That's why I was, you know, really excited with this GameStop thing, because they're such a huge player. They don't want to go out like Blockbuster did when Netflix came along. And so they need to migrate to the digital gaming world, or they're going to get left behind and brick and mortar is going to be dead. So it seems that they are recognizing now, whether I think they've got maybe some cold feet because of regulatory uncertainty. But regardless, gamers aren't going anywhere. And there's like, we're 3 billion gamers, I think is the stat. And so if those gamers can start to better monetize their gameplay, it's pretty clear that they might migrate to games that allow them to do so. It's just kind of classic supply and demand and obvious market dynamics that we'll see play out. And so there will be a winner then. I think that's to your point, that network effect is going to kick in. GameStop probably wanted to be ahead of that. Eventually I think you're right. There will be a winner, and that winning ecosystem, chain, whatever, the assets that live there are likely the ones that people are going to be most coveting to try to get.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I look at the gamer, just in the now, I look at the gamer community, they all hate, I won't say hate, but all my gamer friends think crypto is stupid, think Bitcoin is stupid. They're all in that idea that it's destroying the environment and it's awful for everything. So it's going to take a lot to get that group of gamers into some sort of crypto thing. So it's a very niche market right now. People that care about quote unquote crypto, people that care about these collectibles, that also are hardcore gamers, that also are trying to work towards making these things more valuable, that also are going to need to find a way to sell these things while they're at the peak of their value. Otherwise they lose their potential upside. And so it's just a whole lot of competing factors that are going to have to work out, that I have a hard time seeing that future wherein anybody isn't just selling the shit that they own as soon as they can, as soon as it's more valuable than what they paid for it. Like you look at, I don't know if you're familiar with the Nelk Boys. It's a YouTube channel. They made an NFT called a MetaCard, and they say, oh, if you own this thing, then you have access to our parties and you can get a free t-shirt every 2 months or whatever. And even with that, the value only has gone down over the last 2 years since we've been in this downtrend of pretty much everything in the world going down in value. The difference with Bitcoin is that you never need to sell it because it is money. Therefore, you can use it to buy other things. So every other asset you own in your life, whether it be digital or physical, at some point you need to sell to see a quote unquote return. With Bitcoin, you never need to sell it. You just need to trade it for what you need for your life. And I think that's the maximalist sort of idea, if I can speak for other maximalists, is that we're not looking for gains in any way. Like even you said with Ethereum, you're like, oh, I could have bought it at $2 and then I would have made a bunch of money, but you would have had to sell it at some point to make that quote unquote money. Whereas with Bitcoin, the purchasing power is just going up over time because, you know, say all the buzzwords for Bitcoin, it's scarce, it's divisible, blah, 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 all those things. The value goes up, it's supply and demand, right? Whereas everything else, in order to see these returns, you need to sell them. So any rational person will sell these tokens, sell these NFTs in order to improve their life. And what are they going to sell it for? They're going to sell it for Bitcoin. So again, I just bring it back to, why wouldn't you just buy the Bitcoin now? I think I do agree with your opinion that people need to live their lives and enjoy their time that they're on the earth. I definitely agree with that. You should buy things that make you happy. But to say that...
Well, here's a question. Is if a Bitcoin, like, would a Bitcoin maxi not want to acquire as much Bitcoin as they possibly can? Probably yes, right? Yes. Yeah. Okay. So then wouldn't a smart Bitcoin maxi sell on the highs and buy back on the lows, knowing that the thing moves 80 to 90% sometimes between those hypes? Because I personally, I've been way too principled. So when I got into Bitcoin in the end of 2013, started accumulating in 2014, rode and watched it all go to and then waited until the 2017 pump, didn't sell a dime, watched it all go back down. I should have sold a bunch, then I could have bought much more back. The next bull, I've been up and down through that, didn't sell because I'm too principled on holding. But really, if I was principled on just acquiring as much Bitcoin, I should have sold and I should have bought back. So you know what I mean? Like, so there is this, you should buy and sell if you want to acquire more of it, not just hold.
That would be, I would call that person a fiat maxi because they're trying to get more fiat dollars and they're trying to watch the price in fiat terms. Whereas Bitcoiners in my circles are mostly dudes that have valuable businesses that they can stack sats with because they go out and they produce value for the world. It comes to a moral and ethical standpoint. I know there's a lot of Bitcoiners that are like, oh, people are scamming people. Like, I don't give a fuck. Scam people if you want to, if that's all you can do. But just know that you run the risk of losing. Whereas if I go to work and I go build a house, then I get paid for said built house and I can stack sats with that. I didn't hurt anybody. I produced something of value and I stored that value in Bitcoin. If you want to sit around and trade sats all day because you don't know how to do anything that actually produces value, then I guess that's your prerogative. You can do that. It's just, it's extremely risky because who knows when the price of Bitcoin is going to go up and not come back down again. Maybe totally. It happens next
That's
week.
That's why I was terrible at selling because I was worried about missing that one. The other neat analogy is like buying a miner. Like, do people like, there's that whole, like, is it worth buying a Bitcoin miner or just buying the Bitcoin? It's pretty much always looked like it was better just to buy the Bitcoin.
But yeah, I agree. I think that it's going to be that way for a long time until it gets to a point where you're a dude and you're out in the wilderness and you have a way to acquire energy that's almost next to like free or next to free. And you can just plug in a miner to it. I've had a couple of miners on the show. I'd recommend following a fellow named Hoddle Tarantula. That's what he does. He goes out. He's a master electrician or knows a lot about energy, and he finds cheap ways to find energy, and then he can plug miners into them, and he mines Bitcoin that way. So that's where it's just another economic rational decision. Yep. Will I make more?
There's a lot of stranded power out there. I worked in renewable power and wind and solar, and there's a bunch of hydroelectric's a better example where there's these great opportunities to put hydro in, even just run a river, right? So it doesn't like dam anything and wreck the environment, but you can't get the power lines to it. So you've got these great assets that could generate, but you can't get power lines. Well, guess what? Just build your plant and just turn it into Bitcoin. Just run Bitcoin miner, and the only line you need is an internet connection and no transmission lines.
Exactly. So it just comes down to incentives, right? Are you incentivized to run a miner? Or are you more incentivized to just buy the Bitcoin outright? And for the most part right now, most individuals that are working regular day-to-day jobs, it makes more sense to just buy the Bitcoin and do so by creating value. I guess another issue that Bitcoiners have with crypto people is it seems that a lot of them are in that trading way. So they're looking for trades. A lot of those, I won't generalize, maybe that's unfair, but the way I see it is a lot of these people, that's their job is trading. And by trading, you're not producing value. You're gambling. And again, I don't care, go gamble, but just recognize that you're gambling. And so I think that's what you're doing in every aspect of all crypto. You're gambling, whether you're going to get more or less money by buying NFTs, by trying to sell NFTs, by trading in and out of different coins, by starting up different blockchains. You're gambling that you're going to create more value, and you're hoping that you'll be able to sell at some point to acquire more Bitcoin. Whereas it just makes more logical sense to me to go out, get a job, provide value for your fellow humans, and trade that value in Bitcoin because it's a better money to use. And again, that just goes back to the blockchain idea of here's the ledger of transactions. Nobody can fuck with this. So here's my Bitcoin and you can send it across. Whereas with all other, we've already been going for a while here. With all other blockchains, they can all be fucked with, in my opinion. And or if they can't be, they're trending towards being fucked with. And so I guess your main argument is collectibles have value depending on who wants to collect them. I guess my rebuttal would be, you know, how do you choose the right one? I guess that's up to you. Again, that just goes back to gambling on trying to find the right collectible. Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're just going to say, like, I do agree with pretty much everything you're saying, other than not necessarily all blockchains can be fucked with eventually, because, I mean, there's a lot, like, you're not a developer or tech guy yourself, but there's a lot of innovation in this space, and there's a lot of different ways to now do quote-unquote blockchains. And I don't think all of them necessarily are trending towards being more centralized. So I'm not sure if that's necessarily true. And I think, but regardless, the bigger picture is still why we got on talking, right? Is there more use cases than just money for this tech? And regardless of, of how you choose to eventually store your value, which I'm not arguing with anybody. Like, I totally agree with you. Bitcoin, way to go. Yes. But it doesn't mean there's not other use cases. And I think that's the one fundamental thing that I wish, and I don't know if I've moved your thinking on this at all towards the maybe there's other possibilities, but I mean, I'd like to think that it's just, again, it's like any tech, the internet, when it first came out, like I'm sure you've seen the videos where the dude's on the newscaster and he's like, oh, this is going to be this journalism and this internet thing. I mean, ha 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 ha. And meanwhile, the internet has done so much more than just be a place to send digital mail and to, you know, for blogs. Like it's changed the planet. And that's because humans are so ingenious in our ability to take technology and exploit it and extract whatever we can and modify it and find other ways to use it. Bitcoin is technology, and as far as like the blockchain tech that it is. And I think we're being kind of close-minded to not think there's going to be not other really sensible and useful use cases of this technology that aren't money.
I think the internet, so I try and simplify everything in my life and I try and look at it. I think it's interesting you bring up the internet because at the base layer, the internet, what it did when it came out was it transferred data across a computer network. Mm-hmm. And that's what it still does. The implications of what that data transfer could do for humanity at large was underestimated, I guess, to say the least. But to say what Bitcoin is it transfers value over a computer network. That's what it does. And so to say what that means for humanity in the future is still understated, in my opinion. But I think you only need one network to transfer information, i.e. internet. And then, and if something comes better that comes along that's better than the internet, then I guess we'll see that day, maybe someday. And then you only need one network to transfer value over the internet, and that's Bitcoin, which is why I still don't see how. And so what you're saying is you need these blockchains to transfer data, but we already have the internet to transfer that data. We can already transfer all the examples that you brought up through the internet, through centralized servers. And so I still have a hard time.
Keyword, they're centralized. Exactly. So, but I would prefer things were slightly less centralized if I could choose.
Yeah. I still don't understand why people, I think that's a big like block in some crypto people's heads, is they see decentralized as good with money. And you need to go down the money rabbit hole to understand why it's important that nobody's in control of the money. But when it comes to any other thing, especially data, it's probably better that somebody can control it. I still think it's better that the Fortnite servers can control the flow of skins because you want it to work properly. You don't want a bunch of people running code for a blockchain to run their Fortnite. It's adding blockades. It's adding more computations. It's unnecessary.
No, but it's not that complicated though. The wallet, you have a wallet, your wallet is it, you have NFTs stored in your wallet. And then when you log into the game server, you log in with your wallet as well, just like you would log in normally, except now it's able to scan your wallet, identify the items you have, and then give you the click on whichever ones you want to wear, for example. So it's not that complicated. It's actually pretty simple. And then you, again, add this scarcity of the digital items that you don't have to necessarily trust Epic Games anymore, and you can trust a blockchain. And whether it's not as trustworthy as Bitcoin, of course, but it's more trustworthy than Epic Games.
And then, yeah, I guess that's another question you have to ask. Why is a blockchain more trustworthy than the actual game developer?
Because they've got more independent nodes who aren't colluding. Like the number of nodes can change depending on the consensus mechanism and the blockchain that we're talking about, but it's more than one node, which is all Epic Games is, right? It's just one central thing. They can change the rules, they can turn it off, they can mint more. Like how do you trust them? You can't. So this way you're taking that whole idea of why we can trust Bitcoin, because we just trust math. And again, it's applying that to different asset items, different asset types, in this case, gaming items.
So would you say, so is your stance still that the only blockchain that would have these tokens on it would be the Bitcoin blockchain in some form of a BRC20 token? Or do you still think that there's some other chain that can come along that would be useful?
Oh yeah, no, it won't. It could be on BRC20. that's, I mean, if it's not pragmatically going to be there, it's too slow. It's BRC20s are too, there's too much friction in exchanging. You'd have to use an L2 anyway. So then it starts to complicate things. So when you want to be able to interact with your in-game digital item, and it's an on-chain transaction that's going to take place, like a buy or sell or whatever, you want it to be relatively quick for the user experience. So in that respect, I don't think Bitcoin will be the home of these items. They could be. I like talking about BRC20s because any BTC maxi who says NFTs are shit, period, like end of discussion. It's like, okay, well, and then why? Well, because they're just shit and they live on a centralized blockchain. Okay, well, what about now? You've got ones that live on Bitcoin. So it just kind of throws a wrench in that way of thinking. It doesn't take away from the fact that NFTs are shit based on just the fact that they represent a stupid JPEG. Like, who cares? And you mentioned earlier, like, someone could change the rules about minting and whoever controls the contract of the token can just issue new ones. That's all very well and true, but at least it's running on Bitcoin. So we can start to get away from that decentralized, centralized reason why they're shit. So it's more nuanced. But yeah, no, I don't think these in-game items are going to live on Bitcoin. It's just too slow for what it's great for money, great for like storing value and the value props that it has. And it's hard. And I love all that about Bitcoin. It just doesn't make it very suitable for the transaction throughput you need for what Web3 gaming is going to be. Because there's going to be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of in-game digital items that are going to be represented on a blockchain. And it needs to be scalable in order to pull that off.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you want to have a bunch of in-game assets on a blockchain, it's going to have a really quick blockchain. And I think that just leads to a blockchain that will inevitably fail because it'll be running too fast. It won't be. That's what we saw happen with Solana, and that's what happened with all these other chains. They just shut down.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Solana. Solana's garbage technology. There's better tech out there. The EOSIO tech, the Block One, like they so in 2017, 2018, they did the biggest ICO. They raised $4.1 billion. It's insane. And that company, Block One, delivered this technology. The tech is called EOSIO at the time, and a bunch of different Wax is a blockchain that uses it. They do 25 million transactions a day of just focused on gaming and NFTs. And whether it's shit, it's a bit centralized, sure. Like they have like a bit of control in terms of like the central issuer of this blockchain. They can control who the nodes are. So it's not greatly centralized. It's more decentralized than a central company like Epic Games. So again, along that gradient, it's better, but it hasn't gone down ever. Like that blockchain is running at, again, 20 to 25 million transactions a day for a long, long time. And it's solid. So, I mean, Solana, garbage, no disagreement there. But that's not to say that all blockchains and all different forms of consensus mechanisms and the way this tech is evolving are all also going to be shit. It's just not going to happen. Like, humans are too smart. We're going to come up with better solutions to solve these problems. And one of the problems is I want to have digital in-game items for whatever reason, a game in this case. And so how can I do that? Well, there's a solution there, and it's certainly more. Solana is like a VC chain, right? So that was just a pump and dump thing that hasn't gone to zero yet, but it will.
Yeah, I think we're going to keep butting heads here, but I just still feel like if you come to the logical conclusion of I want to have in-game assets that are easy to move around, quick, and easily accessible by everyone, and the least amount of friction, I think the best way to do that would just to be run it on a centralized server.
It's probably, except you lose all the scarcity bits and the reasons why we like blockchain in the first place. So again, it's trade-offs. There's no perfect. I don't disagree with you. Like, in terms of efficiency, sure, that's the most efficient. Yeah, that makes sense. But there's no ownership rights there. Like, you're completely ceding all of your ability to own the asset and give it to your kids and sell it in the secondary market. You're giving that all to the original game developer. Mm-hmm. So that's not, that's legacy. Like, that's not an evolution of where we are going. I mean, clearly Bitcoin is catching on because people see that they want to be able to, all the reasons we could talk about why it's awesome and why you want to have possession of your value like that. Gamers are people too, of course. Mm-hmm. So like, why would they not want to have possession of their value? Even if it's not perfect like Bitcoin, it's certainly better than a purely central server. Like, it's clearly better in that possessive piece.
But bringing it back to, you know, people just want to live their lives and have fun, and that's why they buy stuff. Hold on. Sorry.
All good.
You know how it is. You said you had kids. Mine's five, so he's he's going through it right now. Okay, century. So people buy things because they want to enjoy their life. And when I buy a pack of cards on Hearthstone, or if you buy a skin on Fortnite, you're buying it because you want to enjoy it then and there. You're not buying it because you're looking for an investment vehicle. So the question is every person going to change their mentality to think of every purchase that they make as a potential investment and or a buy it now, sell it later item? Or are people just going to buy things that they like and just understand that it's going to go to nothing? And I guess that comes down to your theory on what you think of humans in general. And I think a lot of people that aren't Bitcoiners or just look at money in that way, they're totally fine with buying disposable things. And I think that's going to be a hard part of changing the general population's mind on. And I don't even know if it's necessary, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a totally fair point. I guess it comes down to, if I am a gamer and I'm a rational human and I have a choice between two games, and if I play one game, I just play it and I earn some digital items like WoW, a classic WoW, right? You earn some stuff, you earn a shield, you go through the quest, whatever. And that's the end of it. And you could try to maybe monetize it on some sort of legal secondary market, but most people didn't bother with that. So you got two games to choose from. You heard about this new game, you can play it, and it's based on a blockchain and all the items are scarce and there's only so many of them. So as you earn them, they have an immediate market value, and there's a secondary marketplace that you can go and sell it on and actually earn real money to play a game. Which game is going to attract more users? Yeah, probably the game where people are going to be able to earn something from it. So I can not only play something for fun that I like doing, but I can actually make some money doing this. Well, shit, sign me up. I'll play that game.
Yeah, but you don't need a blockchain for that. I'm sorry, but it's just like I have a friend that played a game called EVE Online, you know, and he ran up his character like crazy. He put, I don't know, you know, probably 10 years or whatever it is into this character. And then one day he says, I don't want to play this game anymore. It's sucking too much of my life away. I'm going to sell this character. And he was able to do it with no issue. So again, it comes back to, I feel like a lot of people that think blockchain is this awesome solution also are ignoring the fact that there wasn't a problem in the first place. I guess, yeah, I guess that's where we butt heads the most.
Yeah, I mean,
you feel there's a problem, and I feel there isn't.
Well, there is. I think it's all, I mean, it's not black and white, first of all. Like, yeah, like your buddy who did that, he was able to sell his character. That's great. It's against the terms and services of EVE Online. And if the purchaser got found out, they would delist that account. So there's risk involved. So you're right. Just it. So it's not, even though yes, there's a solution, it's an illegal one.
It makes more sense for a new game to come out and say, hey, this isn't illegal. If you want to buy and sell your characters, we're all for it. And again, you don't need a blockchain to enable that.
No, just trust us. Sure. Yeah. So you can do that. Trust us. I mean, that's tricky for the game though, because now they get into the whole world of money transmitter laws. It's one of the issues with game studios and in this space, and why you've seen some reticence from traditional game developers kind of going that route, because then they have to, if they start to offer a secondary marketplace where people can buy and sell in-game items that they provided, there's a lot of laws they need to comply with. If they go the blockchain route, then they wash their hands of that. They just issue the items through their game, but they don't deal with anything to do with custody or buying or selling. So it actually, it de-risks them from offering that as an option legally to the users and the gamers of their games.
That's a question. So a lot of crypto people think Bitcoiners are, you know, for the SEC taking all this shit down. I'm by no means that person, but if you want to bring the law into it, it's like, if you add a blockchain, it's only a matter of time until, if it can be stopped or if it can be become illegal, then it will be. So the same way that a buddy can sell a character on EVE Online, somebody can sell an NFT. It's just a matter of if the law is going to come down and say yay or nay to this. And that's so then it becomes the game programmer saying, are we going to allow this to happen or not? And again, you don't need a blockchain for that. You can either sell it or you can't sell it. If you put the eyes of the law on it, if the law says, hey, you're not allowed to buy and sell anything, even if it's on a blockchain, Well, Bitcoiners are prepared for that. This is why I like Bitcoiners, because it's like you can put two middle fingers up and say, oh, I'm not allowed to move my sats around. Check this out. Just moving my sats around. Fuck you. And then, but right. with all these other assets, they can be taken away. They can be taken down. The leaders of them can be jailed.
Right? They will absorb the same qualities of Bitcoin. Not the same, well, similar qualities. It's not as decentralized, but the nodes that say we look at Ethereum, it's a global network, right? Those nodes are running around the world. And so just like the US might say, hey, you can't sell that digital item in the US anymore. That's not a global statement. So just like, I mean, no, it doesn't work that way. Like that's another reason why blockchain, because now Epic Games, their head office is in the US, assuming, I don't know if it is, but let's say it is, then yeah, they can get litigated against and they have to cease and desist, and they will then prevent all of their users from accessing and buying and selling whatever, because they're a central authority. You put it on a blockchain, because even though Epic Games might get a cease and desist, too bad. The items live on a blockchain, and that blockchain is decentralized with nodes around the world. So even if the US nodes are compromised in whatever way, it doesn't mean all of them are. So the assets can persist.
But if you have an NFT of a shield in Fortnite and it's running on a decentralized blockchain and you want to go run it on Fortnite and the government says, hey, you're not allowed to run, the government doesn't go to the blockchain. They'll go to Fortnite and say, hey, if you have anybody running these shields in your game, we're going to come shut you down. So then Fortnite's going to say anybody that has one of these accounts is locked out. So there's always going to be a central point of failure if you want to add the law into it. They'll be able to shut it down if they want to shut it down.
Yeah, well, I mean, the same thing is just for Bitcoin in a way, because you, in order to if you want to transact your Bitcoin and buy something in the real world, there's not very many vendors. Like you're in Alberta, you're not finding too many stores you can go to and actually transact with Bitcoin, because a lot of the vendors aren't custodying the Bitcoin anyway. They're using some other intermediary that actually credits their account with Canadian dollars. So the fiat on and off ramps are still a problem with Bitcoin, which sucks, mm-hmm. but it's a reality. So yeah, your point is totally valid, but it also somewhat applies to Bitcoin.
Oh, no, I completely agree. It applies to Bitcoin. I think that's why the meme one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin matters, because yeah. we're gonna see the dollar price go up and down, especially if it becomes illegal. That's what happened in China. They banned mining, mm-hmm. price fucking crashes, and then eventually it recovers because more and more people need a money that is, again, you know, say the buzzwords for Bitcoin, immutable and, yep. and trustless and all these things. People need it, right? So people are going to acquire it by any means necessary. Now that if I hadn't just lost all my Bitcoin in a boating accident, there's nothing stopping me from hiring a kid for a week and saying, hey, if you mow my grass, I'll send you some sats. There's nothing stopping that from happening. And the amount of sats that I send him is totally between me and him, and nobody can stop that transaction from happening. But if he takes those sats and he goes buys a shield in Fortnite, then then they can shut down Fortnite. He can still have the quote unquote NFT, but it's nobody, I guess it comes down to subjective value again. Nobody's going to want that NFT. They're going to want the sats because they want a money that they can buy and sell to get more than just a shield in Fortnite. I'm going to use those sats to acquire food, water, air, and shelter rather than a decorative item in a video game.
100%. Yeah, no, I totally get that. But I mean, again, the people want to live their lives and they want to have these stupid skins. I think it's stupid anyway. It blows my brains that people are willing to spend $50 billion a year on a skin that doesn't affect gameplay, but people are irrational when it comes to this kind of thing. And so your points, like, again, people are irrational. So yeah, I mean, I'd spend your money on Bitcoin because it's going to go up in value and all the reasons why we should own Bitcoin, but people are dumb. So they're gonna buy other stuff.
Yeah, we agree there for sure. People are dumb, that's for sure. I guess we can maybe wrap it up there. I think we agreed on that last point. People are dumb. Whether or not block, and the great thing about this whole debate is, you know, time will tell. I like looking back and looking at all the blockchains that have either failed or gone down in value, and you see that Bitcoin is still a shining light and all the madness that is crypto. And maybe one day, I don't even want to say it because it hurts my feelings, but like maybe one day some crypto will come up and be useful. But We have yet to see it. And I suppose that's another area where crypto people and Bitcoin people differ, is that you're optimistic that a use case will come along, whereas I just still feel like it hasn't happened yet. Should it ever happen, then that'll be cool. But Bitcoin was created to be a good money. It's working as such. And so if another use case for blockchain comes up, then we'll wait and see. But we just haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Henry Ford probably thought the automobile was amazing as it was when he first invented it. And the horse buggy people are like, this is ridiculous. No one's going to want my horse whips. And meanwhile, cars have come a long way. Human ingenuity is pretty impressive. So I think if we look at it just purely tech, Bitcoin is tech, blockchain is tech, and humans are pretty creative. So yeah, I think there's going to be use cases that we've yet to think of that are going to come out of this technology that won't be money. So time will tell. Like you say, we'll have to be continued. We'll stay in touch on Twitter, and in sure. Like a year from now, let's rehash this conversation and see if anything's come along.
Absolutely, man. I'm all for it. I appreciate your openness to have a discussion with the toxic maxi like me. Man, it's been fun. I appreciate you. Feel free to tell people your handle if you want them to follow you on Twitter.
It's Barnzor, BARNZOOR is my name, and I will look forward to seeing this. So yeah, I'm going to definitely retweet this one when I see you post this.
be aware that my friends will attack you relentlessly. So I'm not responsible for what the Bitcoiners do to crypto people, man. So I appreciate you. This has been fun. And
I got thick skin. All good.
Right on. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. We appreciate you. You can find me on Twitter at Sly Goomba. I'm going to be putting out more episodes. Look forward to this incoming season. It's going to have a little bit of a different feel. This was a fun one. Chris, thanks again. Until next time, thanks for listening. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.